Money FM 89.3, the best of prime time. In the spotlight on Money FM 89.3.
Thanks for joining us on Primetime. I'm Bharati Jagdish. Now, a new UN report has revealed that nations are failing to live up to their climate pledges, pointing Earth towards more intense fires, heat waves, drought and other types of havoc. Now, just 26 out of 193 countries that agreed last year to step up their climate actions have followed through with more ambitious plans. The world's top two polluters, China and the US, have taken some action, but they've not pledged more this year. The pressure, of course, is on not just to track and disclose emissions, but ultimately to lower them, which is what the Singapore government has pledged to do as well. Leading global financial institutions, Sumitomo Mitsui Banking Corporation and Economic Impact, in their recently launched study examining Asia-Pacific's transition to a net zero future, surveyed about 450 executives across nine countries in APAC, including Singapore, and it revealed that the region will need to address the funding gap for renewable energy projects in order to accelerate transition. To share more insights, Rajiv Kannan joins us. He's co-head of the APAC division at Sumitomo Mitsui Banking Corporation. Hi, Rajiv.
Hi, Bharti. Thanks for having me over.
All right, Rajiv. So let's talk about the various challenges. What is preventing all of this from happening more smoothly?
Well, I think one of the challenges is obviously there's a lot more investment needed into the renewable sector than what has already gone in. I would firstly say that there has been good positive effort being already done in terms of investing into renewables, but it's not enough because renewable sector by nature is needs a significant amount of investment, not just into solar, wind sector, but also into enhancing the intermittency issue of renewables. So you need to put batteries. Ultimately, you also need to think about how to reduce the carbon emissions from existing coal projects or gas projects. So I think that's where the challenge is.
But that's the thing, Rajiv. What I'm getting at really is what is preventing both public and private sector players from putting more money towards all of this?
So we had the study done, as you mentioned, with the Economic Impact. And based on the study, they identified three key challenges in Asia-Pacific relating to energy transition. The first one is higher cost of renewable energy. So compared to existing sources of power generation, the current cost of renewable energy is a bit high. The second is lack of adequate funding for renewable energy. While most banks and a number of other financial institutions have committed investment into the sector, for example, SMBC had announced that we will allocate 30 trillion Japanese yen over the next this decade to the sector, but that's not enough. And the third is lack of clarity over the long-term profitability of the space. So I think I would say these three areas remain a bit of a concern, but I do see positive aspects coming along.
All right, let's talk about those positive aspects because people need to be convinced to invest in this arena, don't they?
Yes, they do. And I think it is now becoming quite clear that this is not just the government have to do something on their own or the private sector has to do something on their own or the people or the citizens of a country have to do something on their own. This is a collective effort. And I think now what we can clearly see with COP27 coming up in Egypt, that there is a lot more clear focus on action rather than talk. So let me give you some examples of the actual actions being taken. So, for example, as I already mentioned, a bank like us has already committed a significant amount of funding to the space. The other recent positive example was Singapore on its own announcing that they'll actually achieve a carbon emission level at 2030, much below what they initially had planned. So the governments are taking positive steps. The organizations such as us are taking positive steps. Now the third area is how do we sort of get certain countries which are more dependent on fossil fuels to reduce the subsidies they provide to that space. Because once we have a reduction in the subsidies which they provide, I think that will extend the amount of investment going to those countries in renewables.
Okay, some might say that it's a chicken and egg situation. You've got to have the money come in before the subsidies can be cut. So how do you think that particular problem can be addressed better?
So the amount of investment which is needed is significant. The Asian Investor Group on Climate Change estimated that the investment gap for Asia's energy supply is like somewhere between 26 trillion to 37 trillion between 2020 and 2050. So it is a very large number. But at the same token, I think the total amount of investable funds globally is close to $100 trillion, and which is going to keep growing over a period of time. So getting some of that investment coming in annually into investing into renewable energy will be making a fairly positive impact. The second one is technological development. So we are already seeing that significant amount of capital is being invested into new technologies, for example, green hydrogen, green ammonia. And I think in a few decades, we will also see some form of fusion energy coming into the space. So I think a combination of proactive investment from the investment community and the banking community, complemented by technology, will get us there.
I understand that the lack of a unified model for cross-border energy trade is also holding back this transition. How can this be addressed better?
Yes, I think that's true, because one of the challenges we do have is there is no consistent carbon price in different countries. For example, I think if you talk about some of the countries in Europe, they have a carbon price north of $100. But again, most Asian countries don't have a carbon price at the moment. Singapore has started off with a carbon price, which will increase over a period of time. So unless we have some consistency in terms of carbon price, it's difficult for people to then justify allocation of capital to one country to move that carbon footprint, which is benefiting or created in that particular country, to another country. So I think firstly, having some sort of a common understanding on carbon tax and carbon pricing will be quite important. The second one will be how can the countries and the government basically create a very strong push from their own side to reduce the fossil fuel usage. For example, Indonesia, again, it has a very large source of coal supply, and a lot of this power generation is through coal power generation. But it's very difficult for them to immediately convert that into renewable energy, because firstly, it is a lot more expensive, and secondly, it will affect the quality of life of the common man in Indonesia. So progressively, how do they address that will be quite important.
Yeah, I was just about to say, because the APAC region is a very diverse region. We're all at different stages of development as well. So to what extent do you think countries helping each other will be key to all of this?
I think ASEAN is talking about, and it has been in the works for some time, but for example, we are talking about a transmission grid which connects across the various ASEAN countries. Mm. Now, a country like Laos has access to abundant volume of hydropower generation. Now, if some of that hydropower generation, which currently primarily flows to Thailand, can also flow all the way down south to Singapore, for example, that will already create a positive impact. And similarly, for example, there is a plan for a very large renewable energy solar plant in Australia, which could then supply power to both Indonesia and Singapore. So I think this kind of grid connectivity and intra-country transmission of power will definitely help us bring this issue to a better solution.
How much money are we talking about here? How much really is needed in the next few years?
I did mention briefly earlier, I think we're talking about a very large chunk of money, $26 trillion to $37 trillion. So it's a large number.
US dollars, yeah?
US dollars.
We should remind people of the urgency of all of this. And it sounds like a mammoth task, which is why I want to go back to this point. Yes, you are spelling out the need. You are spelling out the importance of this. But how to actually convince people to take action, both entities in the public and private sector? How to make a business case for this amid all of the challenges?
So I guess the level of understanding of the people in most countries is very clear, right? As in, they recognize the direct and immediate impact of climate change, and they recognize that the future impact can be a lot more severe. So I think most people are recognizing of the fact that this is a current and present danger for all the countries. So that part is given. The second is, how do we sort of get all the governmental agencies and the countries to basically now say that, okay, we need to take a faster pathway to net zero? So many countries have already announced a pathway to net zero till 2050, for example, but some of the bigger countries have not yet done so. Now, if all of them get aligned on a pathway to net zero by 2050, then maybe some of them may be having a slightly longer pathway, but ultimately reaching net zero by 2050. So I think these collective action, and that's why a forum like COP27 and the COP26 before that was quite important to get a collective thought process among all the countries.
But Rajiv, we have to acknowledge that there is often a say-do gap, right? They'll say one thing, but it won't happen. They won't deliver for various reasons. And we also have to point out that the global energy crisis, inflation, economic uncertainty, it's causing many countries, many in Europe as well, to put their net zero targets on the back burner. In fact, some are reverting to using fossil fuels. So how exactly at this time can this issue be prioritized?
Yeah, what you're saying is true because, again, as we observed in Europe, they do have to, unfortunately, increase their supply of electricity through fossil fuel. But that is because they have to address the situation on the Russian gas. But having said that, they recognize now the immense importance of diversifying away from natural gas and fossil fuel. So on one hand, in the near term, they will have to commit a lot more capital to maybe short-term solutions like fossil fuel generating electricity. But at the same time, they are also committing significant amount of funding to both wind, solar, but more importantly, the hydrogen value chain. So, for example, Germany has also announced a significant amount of investment going into the hydrogen value chain. And that should then imply that by later part of this decade, we will see some of the positive benefits. Because the more capital you allocate to technologies such as hydrogen, the amount of hydrogen that can be created at a lower cost improves. So currently the biggest challenge for hydrogen is the cost. And I do believe that by later part of this decade, this could be at a level which is probably accessible to most countries.
Now, I also understand that over a third of your survey respondents said that a clearer renewable energy regulatory framework is needed. Perhaps you could go a little deeper into this. What are the elements that will be needed in such a framework in order to make it work?
So the key considerations for renewable energy is, one is you can set up a renewable power plant, for example, a solar plant or a wind farm power plant, but you need to actually be able to transmit it to the grid, through the grid, to the actual users of this power, right? So one of the challenges has been that there's underinvestment into the transmission system. So when we talk about having a clarity on terms of the regulatory framework, one of the things which most people have identified is that we need to make sure that there is commensurate investment going into the transmission sector to complement the amount of investment going into the renewable sector. So that is one example of it. The second one, as I said before, was can we have a very clear carbon tax? Because then once you add on that carbon tax element into the overall cost of power generation, then there is a lot more clarity in terms of which makes sense now and which makes sense in the future. Because as I said, one of the issues most investors are concerned about is the long-term profitability of renewable energy.
Now, Rajiv, let's talk about Singapore very quickly. We have set targets to reach net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. We've also announced a stronger 2030 target as part of Singapore's efforts to fight climate change, to meet its international obligations as well. At this point, what should Singapore be doing? What can we do better?
Yeah, firstly, I think I'm really heartened to see Singapore committing to a more ambitious target. And it is actually on track, in fact, going to probably exceed it by 2030. Now, as we've seen through the recent events at the Singapore International Energy Week, there has been a fair bit of focus on hydrogen. So we have seen companies such as Sembcorp signing up MOUs with certain Japanese companies, for example, of development of hydrogen. We've also seen that investment has been announced into a low-carbon energy research center. So these are sort of a couple of good examples of what is happening. But I think one of the other areas where we will also have to think about is how do we actually also think about energy efficiency, but also in terms of some form of energy, better utilization of energy. Because at the moment, I think people are probably not focused on energy efficiency and energy optimal utilization of energy, particularly in the household sector. So if those probably come in combined with a move towards greater utilization of hydrogen in the future, we could significantly reduce our reliance, which is currently 95% on natural gas, to a much lower level.
Finally, Rajiv, I want to talk about the COP27 taking place this weekend in Egypt. What are your expectations of this summit?
So I think the key focus of COP27 this time, and coincidentally the minister who was responsible for this event from Egypt was in town last month, and she did highlight the focus should be on implementation of the decisions and the mandates which was agreed during the COP26. Mm. So previously, a number of key mandates were announced, but now we need to talk about action. And I think that's where we would want to see a lot more clarity in terms of how the billions of dollars which are needed for this sector are actually shown by actual implementation.
Thanks very much for that, Rajiv. Appreciate your time today. Rajiv Kannan, co-head of the APAC division at Sumitomo Mitsui Banking Corporation.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.